Music, or do you like technology? Or do you like talking to people? CJSF Radio is the place for you. Here at CJSF, the opportunities are endless. You can interview artists and bands, speak up for what you believe in, or even host your own show, and tons more. To find out more information, visit cjsf.ca.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded February 5th, 2025. Well, with its start, the 47th administration of the Republic is old again. Donald Trump becomes, in his belated second term, the oldest man ever sworn into the office. Yet despite this decrepitude, Trump has begun once more with the energy and vigor of a much younger man, preemptively capitulating the nation's foreign policy before even reaching the president's bedroom. But that's what 100 or so million buckaroos buys Miriam Adelson in the fading days of empire, a big fat Florida sunrise reigning over Palestine's finish, or so she would have it. And the great orange maroon would also have America resemble more Adelson's Israel, making of its citizens an embattled enclave surrounded by high walls, barbed wire, killer drones above, robot dogs below, and terrifying concentration camps for the Untermensch. To which end, Trump has promised a revitalized Guantanamo Bay made to hold 30,000 and more of the worst of the worst, naturally. Andy Worthington's an English journalist, activist, author, photo historian, filmmaker, musician, songwriter, and principal of the Forefathers Band, whose album Songs of Loss and Resistance is now available. Andy is, too, a co-founder of the ongoing Close Guantanamo campaign, whose first Wednesday monthly coordinated global vigils returned to his native London and beyond today. Worthington's book titles include The Guantanamo Files, the story of the 774 detainees in America's illegal prison, Stonehenge, Celebration and Subversion, and the Battle of the Beanfield. His articles appear at his website, andyworthington.co.uk, where he invites support, as ever, for the effort to close, finally, Guantanamo. Andy Worthington in the first half. And much was made in his first go-round of Trump's relationship with Vladimir Putin. So what next, then, for Russo-American relations? And what's to become of Greenland? Greenland? John Helmer's a journalist and author who's spent decades living in and reporting from Russia. He's the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears. John's recent article at Dances with Bears, Due North, Trump Opens the War Against Russia from Greenland, offers a window on the prospects of our northern near future. John Helmer and Trump's explicit polar expeditions in the second half. But first, Andy Worthington and Gitmo getting back to its roots. Welcome back to the program, Andy.
Thanks, Chris. Always a pleasure.
Well, it's my pleasure, of course, every time, and I really appreciate it. Andy, we're right on the ball here. Just last night, as it turns out, the very first flights of so-called illegals, as they call them in some quarters in the United States, began arriving at Guantanamo Bay's prison facilities. Andy, can you give us maybe a little bit of the background on the use of the prison facilities there for interdicted aspirant migrants, and what's different about that now?
Sure. Well, we all know about the War on Terror prison, which was established at Guantanamo in January 2002. What a lot of people don't know, or didn't know until maybe they've started to find out recently, is that at the other end of the U.S.'s sprawling naval base on this huge part of Cuba that they stole is a migrant detention facility, which was established in the 1990s. And it was largely used to hold Haitian and Cubans who were trying to get to the United States mainland to claim asylum. So they were kind of intercepted at sea before that was possible, and held at Guantanamo as the government then arranged to send them back to their home countries, or in some cases, I think, to send them to other countries. But at one point, it was undertaken on a huge scale where there were 25,000 of these people at one point in these kind of vast tents in a facility that really wasn't equipped to cope with them. So, they ended up putting tents on the golf course that was there. they ended up having to send service members' families back to the mainland for 7 months at one point because the entire place was overrun with these vast numbers of people that were being held. Crucially, you know, this kind of came to an end by about 1996, and although the migrant detention facility still exists, and it's a kind of, you know, at its heart is this kind of 120-bed kind of bunkhouse. It's not really held more than a few dozen people at a time ever since, although it has continued in use throughout every presidency since Clinton. It's the combination of the fact that, you know, Trump had plans for a migrant facility at Guantanamo in 2017, which came to nothing. But he'd obviously, at that time, I imagine somebody had shown him a photo of how it was in the 1990s, and he put that together with the Guantanamo War on Terror prison, which, of course, I'm sure we all remember he wanted to load up with bad dudes before he became president the first time. And it seems perfect to him that this, you know, this fulfills all of his horrendous dreams all in one place and in one package.
Oh, God. You know, that makes me think right off the bat is, Jesus, this is going to be a long 4 years. But I think it's worth mentioning, too, though, when you're talking about the first incarnation, that the years, those early 90 years coincide with the first coup that the Americans sponsored against the Haitian president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, the former priest who was working for the benefit of the poor and has the distinction of being, I believe, the only president ever couped twice by the Americans. But he was reintroduced back into the political process around that time that you mentioned, around 96. He was president in 1990, was couped in 91, I believe, if memory serves, got back into power and was couped again in the early 2000s. But that led to this great outflux of desperate Haitians because the reintroduction of the dictatorship in Haiti.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a good point. And also, if I just may, Chris, when you said it's going to be a long 4 years, in response to that, I immediately thought it's been a very long fortnight.
It seems like 4 years already. Well, it is one a minute, isn't it? And I remember that. I mean, I'd largely scrubbed a lot of the memories of the first Trump presidency, and I think that was how he got into power. I think a lot of other people had forgotten, or, you know, blissfully forgotten just how tedious this guy is. But when he came in the first time, it was just one a minute, you know, it's just like one thing. And you could never keep up with it. And it seemed to me that that was a strategy that the Bush, the second Bush administration did as well, that they just, it was a shock and awe of really wild anti-constitutional measures and other things, and as well as their foreign adventures and so forth. But it was, I mean, you just couldn't keep up with it, it seemed.
Well, yeah, I mean, this seems more extreme in the fact that, you know, he's got this absolutely massive package of executive orders and proclamations, which clearly, you know, people have had to work on rather than just allowing him to ramble incoherently. But threaded through all of it is his rambling incoherence, which makes, that's part of what makes it so so frazzling, is because, and then, you know, the media, as usual, tries to make out that there is some coherence to it, but there really isn't. What he's saying may or may not be true. What he's saying may or may not end up being a policy that is implemented at some point. And they all just bow down to it instead of just stepping back and fundamentally stepping back and say and pointing out how incoherent he is.
Well, at least now, though, Andy, the press has had 4 years of practice with Joe Biden pretending that the president knew what he was talking about and was actually coherent.
You have to laugh.
Yeah, well, I guess. I mean, what else are we going to do? Well, so now this plan, although, you know, we can laugh about it from our comfort for now, at least, you've got an article, a follow-up on something you'd previously put up at your site, andyworthington.co.uk, to hold 30,000 migrants in prison at Guantanamo. How does Trump propose to redefine them? so that they're beyond the reach of the law. I mean, as if these guys need to do that at all, the way that the scoff laws they've been in so many different areas. So tell me about this article, Andy.
Sure, Chris. Well, I mean, you know, ever since the executive order came out, which was a week ago, that I've been attempting to understand on what basis he was proposing to send people to Guantanamo. And of course, mostly the mainstream media wasn't very helpful. Going along with the spectacle rather than examining the substance, it wasn't really explained what right he had to take people from the US mainland to Guantanamo, you know, what legal rights he thought that they had or didn't have, you know, and that's a part of the story that we haven't had explained yet. I was looking at the whole of his war on migrants, which, you know, which I think is very clearly what's happening. And his attempt is to get the American people to regard the more than 13 million undocumented migrants in the United States, most of whom are law abiding and just want to work and pay their taxes, to portray them all as terrorists. He has expanded expedited removal, which, you know, was introduced in the 1990s. It's been going on a long time, you know, hostility towards undocumented migrants. And this was has been in place for a long time as a way of removing people who haven't been in the U.S. for long and who are caught not too far from the border. But he suddenly, as soon as he got into office, he expanded it to the entire U.S. mainland. And what that means is that you can be seized by immigration officials and you can be deported immediately without any access to a lawyer or any kind of immigration hearing. You know, it's a loophole that should never have existed. But for it now to have been applied to the entirety of the United States, I mean, it just means that undocumented immigrants must be hiding and cowering, you know, in every state, you know, fearing that they'll just be abducted and removed without any due process, without any safeguards, you know. And the basis of it is based around crimes, but not a conviction for a crime. You only have to be charged with, you could be charged with shoplifting by a bent policeman. And if you're captured, you can then be put on a plane back to wherever you came from without any due process. You know, that's horrific. But I mean, he seems to be so effectively dealing with the problem that he has perceived. And, you know, and the immigration people have, I think, around 40,000 places for prisoners on the U.S. mainland. People who, you know, would be able to challenge the basis of their deportation. So not the expedited removal and the, you know, the familiar process that still exists of actually being able to talk to a lawyer and to be able to challenge the basis of your deportation. And, you know, to bring in some old fashioned notions of human rights and refugee law, to have an asylum claim because it may be extremely dangerous to be sent back to where you're from. So I couldn't really understand what the basis of Guantanamo was, apart from show. You know, it looks like he's being tougher than tough by sending people to Guantanamo by using the language of the worst, which, you know, we all know from the war on terror prison. But are they going to have a right to legal advice, to legal support? Because if they are, then he suddenly made this whole process about 1,000 times more expensive. Because everything that involves Guantanamo is 1,000 times more expensive because there's nothing there. Everything has to be shipped in or flown in. So if he wanted to do this on scale, then it's going to be hugely, ruinously expensive and ultimately pointless compared to doing things on the mainland. So my big fear is that what he may want to do is find a way to redefine these people as terrorists who can be held without any rights, which is exactly the predicament of the men held in the war on terror prison, which, of course, still exists and where 15 men are still held.
And he would get a lot of support for that politically in the United States, I imagine. There is still such a thing as international law, though. You mentioned that, that there are legitimate asylum seekers, people that are fleeing dictatorships like the ones so prolifically created by the Americans themselves, like in Haiti and countless other places, that under international law, they have a right to flee for their lives. And other nations that are signed on to humanitarian treaties have the obligation to allow them to come in and have their claims assessed properly and provisions made for them to be able to live in the hosting country for a period of time. I mean, there's all of this seems to be getting thrown out with the baby as well.
Yeah, I mean, but and on this, you know, I mean, unfortunately, as a UK citizen, I have to say that what he's doing isn't out there in terms of what other countries in the West are doing. Mm. I mean, we have a Labour government now, but it hasn't repealed the laws that were passed by the previous far-right Tory government, which made it illegal to claim to be a refugee and land on British soil. You know, it's absolutely extraordinary the depths to which right-wing governments have sunk in their horrible, malignant war on anyone who seeks to get into their country by irregular routes. And, you know, of course, there aren't any regular routes. There's no regular route into the UK. People have to come across in small boats, and then the moment they land, they're criminalised. The Tory government tried to make the very act of being a refugee into something criminal. It's extraordinary. So,
well, and you had those deportation edicts that I can't recall if they were signed into law now, that they were going to send people to a third country. I think it was Uganda or something like that. So
it
that
was Rwanda.
And Rwanda.
That's so, in the end, you know, because it was unworkable and idiotic and. But, you know, it's part of a bigger picture. And clearly, you know, that's what Trump's doing. But he's doing it on a scale that it's not like he's trying to stop people getting in. But he's waging war on so many people who are resident in the United States and who, you know, as I say, for the most part, are not criminals. In fact, you know, the incidences of confirmed criminality amongst migrants are less than they are amongst, you know, established United States citizens. So it's a fake war. It's a fake racist war.
What a surprise. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Andy Worthington. Andy's an English journalist, activist, author, photo historian, filmmaker, musician, songwriter, and principal of the Forefathers Band, whose album, Songs of Loss and Resistance, is now available at their Bandcamp page, among other places. He's too co-founder of the ongoing Close Guantanamo campaign, whose first Wednesday monthly coordinated global vigils returned to his native London and beyond there again today. How did that go, Andy? This was earlier today, our time.
Well, you know, the London vigil was good. You know, it's always good to get together with people, and we were able to, you know, highlight this new problem that Trump has sprung on us. It's a little bit early to have heard back from what happened across the states, but I know that there are some places that are quite mobilized because of what Trump has just done, that suddenly the tiny backwater issue of the war on terror prison at Guantanamo has, you know, has become a much huger active problem through the migrant camp extension proposal. So, you know, I would hope that that becomes bigger if this is going to carry on, you know, and it's so crucial to tie in the story of the war on terror prison and the alleged terrorists held there with what Trump is trying to do. Is that it's so important. I suppose what we all thought was that there was something finite to the Bush administration's war on terror. It had become a legacy issue, and the last of its places was Guantanamo, where people were still held fundamentally without rights, according to, you know, this terrible tearing up and burning of all international and domestic laws and treaties in 2002. But suddenly there is an aspect of this that is looking like it's being very deliberately resuscitated by Donald Trump for the most horrendous and cynical reasons. So, you know, that is a struggle that I think needs to unite all kinds of different people.
Well, of course, in your book, The Guantanamo Files, the stories of the 774 detainees in America's illegal prison, it's down now, those detainees, to 15. So, I mean, that's been a long haul. Of course, the 21st, what was it, the 23rd anniversary was just a couple of weeks ago of the first opening. And then just hours ago, I got up this morning to see that these first flights. When you say that Trump, likes a bluster, and he, this tough talk is a familiar tactic to Canadians and now to the Danes, I read, as well, to their distress. And it's going to be soon, if it isn't already, in Britain. This is the way, Trump doesn't, there's no subtlety about the man. And we might have thought that maybe this Guantanamo thing was part of the bluster to try to scare what migrants could just leave the country. For when they, as they did the last time, and others that might be considering going to America, turning around and staying home altogether. But now I read just today as well, Trump has signed a deal with the El Salvadorian strongman president, hippest dictator in the world, as he calls himself, to host untold numbers of prisoners in that country, famous for its supermax prisons that they built to get rid of a legitimate gang epidemic in that country, but has also been subject to all kinds of human rights abuses and false arrests and all kinds of troubles. And now it seems that Trump's capacity problem, whereas, as you rightly say, Guantanamo is super expensive and they don't have the facilities to handle the 30,000 he began, the number he began saying would end up there. But now it seems that he can outsource it.
Well, I mean, yes, maybe he can, but that's tying into, the problem that we discussed with the British plan to use Rwanda, and that, certain other countries in the West are trying to outsource to other countries problems that they don't want to have to deal with themselves, which are in many ways their own responsibility. So I'm not entirely sure about this. It seems to me that there must be room for legal challenges here. Who is he sending to another country? If these people are not from El Salvador, then there's a process involved by which, he has to send foreign nationals to another country to be imprisoned. On what basis are they being imprisoned? Well, which point in this story have they had any kind of trial? We're in this dangerous area again of stripping human beings of all their rights, which is remains, Chris, the key story about Guantanamo. It remains the reason that myself and those of us who continue to call for its closure insist that it's, it's not a forgotten legacy issue. It is a fundamental assault on the right of human beings, whoever they are, not to be imprisoned forever without any charges, without any trials, without any due process, without any rights. That's the story of Guantanamo Bay. The men held there were imprisoned deliberately there to be human beings who had no rights whatsoever. And sadly, in many practical terms, some of the men who are still held there, the ones who've not been charged, are still in that position. They have no fundamental rights as human beings. The ones who've been charged in the military commissions are part of a legal process, however kind of ailing that legal process is. It is, it is a legal process with courts and rights and safeguards, but the people who have never been charged at Guantanamo have no fundamental rights. The decisions about whether to hold them forever indefinitely without charge or trial or to approve them for release are taken by administrative review processes, which have no legal component. They're, alarmingly similar to the administrative detention policies that Israel uses, which it inherited from the British. In Israel, they cynically hold people without charge or trial. Then they subject them to an administrative detention decision, which can be renewed every 6 months forever without them ever, actually being put in a courtroom and charged with anything. So all of these gray areas should worry us very deeply because Guantanamo and the war on terror should have been such a profound lesson to us that when you start breaking all of the rules regarding fundamental rights that people have, you end up in a horrendous mess.
Well, not to mention the as far as the war on terror goes, people also have the right not to have their houses bombed, from the sky in the middle of the night, and then with no recompense or anything. But I mean, the press in the States is talking about this Bukele, the president of El Salvador's offer. Marco Rubio, the new Secretary of State, what a sentence that is.
Yes.
He has said, "Oh yeah, this sounds great, but I'll have to run it by legal." To paraphrase little Marco, but the mainstream press in the States is renting their garments, saying, "Well, you know, sending American citizens to foreign states is unconstitutional and all that, and sending prisoners to foreign states." I don't see them questioning, though, this idea that Guantanamo is a foreign state. It seems to be taken now, after so many years, as granted that it's a de facto part of America itself, so that those laws do and don't apply. Somehow.
Well, I think what's unfortunately happened over 23 years, Chris, is that foreign nationals held at Guantanamo with you know, no connection to the United States have found it extremely hard to get any important bodies in the United States to recognize that they have fundamental rights. But it's completely different if you're being taken from the U.S. mainland. Whatever the basis of your relationship with the United States, to have been present on U.S. soil transforms the picture in very complicated ways for a government that is insisting that it has the right to shirk all of its legal responsibilities towards these people. I think it's going to be difficult for them.
Well, yeah, difficult to be sure, but then there's going to be little sympathy. There used to be an idea that prisoners, it was reasonable that they be in proximity to their family and so forth, and you don't send them across the country. Well, I mean, this couldn't be further from that. The article, again, is to hold 30,000 migrants in prison at Guantanamo. How does Trump propose to redefine them so they're beyond the reach of the law? That'll be the migrants first. It'll be the citizens second, I imagine. Andy, we're fast out of time. You can find that article at Andy's site, andyworthington.co.uk. And the new album, you just dropped it just in the last minute or so we have, Andy. Tell me about it.
Songs of Loss and Resistance. Those are a collection of songs recorded over many years that tackle various aspects of the problematical world that we find ourselves in. Old school protest music, I suppose, really inspired by the late 70s reggae and the kind of punky protest music of the time. And, you know, I hope people get to listen to it and like it.
Well, they will get to listen to one track that I'm going to play in the transition. And I like the punky reference there, because that's I'm going to play Affordable. And the affordability in this city that I live in, I know it's not as bad as London, but it's trying. And Vancouver and Toronto and the other, well, just across this country and the whole continent, really, because of this, the new rentier form of economic development. The only thing that is holding up a middle class, it seems now, is their ability to turn the workers into serfs, you know. But
absolutely, Chris. And also, you know, not just individuals doing it, but massive transnational financial companies doing it.
BlackRock and the rest.
To discuss this, which I think would probably lead us into Elon Musk and the way that, you know, what he's doing with the United States government. And
well, that sounds like a great teaser for the next time. Let's talk about, the tower fire and the rest of it at Grenfell.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Andy, for coming on, again. And go to Andy's website again, andyworthington.co.uk. Till the next time, eh?
Yep. Always a pleasure, Chris. Thanks.
All right, now stay tuned. John Helmer is going to come up after the break. Here's Andy and the Four Fathers with Affordable.
Let's back to haunt the streets. A social cleansing and a state demolition. Our leaders think we're soft in the head. They say there is no other solution to a housing crisis caused by greed and their appetite for class destruction. It's clear that there's a serious need for a massive social home building program. When they say affordable, it's a some streets. A social cleansing and a state demolition.